Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Rogue Angel by Alex Archer. Rogue Angel number 30. The Other Crowd. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Colleen Delaney, Tim Getman, Alexander Strain, Michael John Casey, Terrence Aselford, Nick DePinto, Jeff Baker, Richard Rowan, Danny Gavigan, James Lewis, Dylan Lynch, David Coyne, Corey James, Casey Platt, Elizabeth Jernigan, Alyssa Willman, and Ken Jackson.
The young woman stood there, surveying the battleground and its tableau of death and destruction. Over the course of the day, she'd become physically numb to violence, to blood. To her faith? No. She still clung to faith, to blind trust and humble servitude. It was all she had. Suddenly caught by the shoulders, she struggled to lift her sword, but the man who held her against his armored chest was too strong.
Yeah. The Maid of Orleans, does your faith allow forgiveness for murder? You claim power with your sword, vile wench. It is not your power to own. I've never killed a woman, but you are no female. You are a...
Warm blood spattered her cheek. The man holding her suddenly fell away from her body. She didn't look down, because she'd seen too much death. A new opponent slashed his bloodied sword toward her. Scrambling to counterattack, her blade tip caught on the screw at her knee greave. She wouldn't be able to deflect the blow. The blade would cut through her skull. When no armored soldier shouted back, and she did not feel the agonizing slice of blade to skull, Anya realized she was sitting in her bed. No English soldier stood before her. No mud or shouts of vengeance littered the scene. She could not even feel the sting of relentless rain. She'd had some nasty nightmares about fire before, but not so much the Catholic saint. And never had a dream been so vivid. Almost as if she'd time-traveled and acted out the scene herself, as if she had stood amid the carnage to swing against the enemy. It is not your power to own. It was a strange statement she couldn't resist pondering. What power? Had he meant the bloody yet spiritual quest that had seen Joan of Arc through countless battles, all in the name of faith to her uncrowned king? Had the people of the time known the Maid of Orléans carried a mystical sword? Anya possessed that very sword, a sword that had once been wielded by Joan of Arc.
Hello?
I know it's early, but listen, Anya, I have an assignment for you. It's a really cool segment for the show. I need you to go to Ireland ASAP. Look, I know this may sound crazy, but hear me out. We've got some odd reports from there, and I want you to follow up and see if you can track fairies.
The voice on the line jabbered on, but Anya's attention remained divided. Doug Morrell, the producer of Chasing History's Monsters, was young, energetic, and while not exactly a buttoned-up businessman, he had put Chasing History's Monsters high in the ratings with his quirky style of infusing real history along with legend and myth and making it all somehow work. Anya grudgingly gave him kudos for that.
Are you listening, Anya?
Yes, go on, Doug. Wait. Did you just say what I think you said?
I did.
Doug, I can't believe you asked me to go to Ireland to track...
Fairies! Anya, people have disappeared close to a County Cork village called Ballybeg. Rumors report that fairies are stealing them. It's like the legends say. When you go wandering on fairy territory, they don't like it and will capture you and make you dance for 100 years. Or something like that. What was the name of that dude? Rip Van Winkle. Wait, he fell asleep. He wasn't dancing.
Doug, stop, please.
Anya, I'm serious. The report comes from a trustworthy source, the Irish Times.
It was probably a puff piece, Doug. Did you find it in the entertainment section? Go back to sleep. It's too early.
I know it's like 6 in the morning, but in Ireland it's already lunchtime. Do you know they eat blood pudding there? Can you imagine? Anyway, real fairies have been reported kidnapping people. You have to fly to Ireland now. I've already booked the flight for you and the cameraman.
Oh, Doug. I have humiliated myself in more ways than a grown woman should have to endure. All for the sake of the show and its precious ratings.
And I appreciate your efforts, Anya. You know that. The Lost Mermaids of Wales episode rocked.
There were no tails on those women when we filmed them swimming in the ocean. Doug, I'm gonna have to revoke your Photoshop license before the FCC catches on to your antics.
You're kidding me. I thought the tails were realistic. I spent a small fortune on night classes learning how to create water effects.
Get Christy to do it.
Christy Chatham, the other host of Chasing History's Monsters, would do anything as long as she was allowed to do it in skimpy clothing and suntan lotion was figured into travel expenses. Fairies seemed right up her alley.
I have 2 tickets to Ireland in my hands, Anya. One for you and one for the cameraman. I'll meet you at JFK Airport in an hour.
I don't believe you heard my emphatic no.
You don't have to believe in fairies to go looking for them, Anya. Besides, when have you ever believed in any of the monsters the show has chased? Dracula. Come on.
Believe? Try harboring delusional fantasies. I could buy into the legend of a Romanian prince killing a myriad and spilling so much blood that he was considered a vampire. But little winged creatures? They're fairy tales, Doug. Someone has been pulling your leg.
Not according to the Irish Times. There's a piece about the disappearances in yesterday's feature section. 3 people have gone missing in 2 weeks. The last one just yesterday. Can you imagine how many ways the show would rock if you got footage of fairies?
Nope. Not gonna happen. I'll stick to Dracula and mermaids, thank you very much. Hell, I've even investigated the chupacabra for you, Doug, but seriously, I think you've been imbibing too much fairy dust. The tiny critters exist only in kids' movies and, obviously, Doug Morrell's mind.
Fine.
Fine?
I was saving this part in the event you refused me.
What, you're going to actually pay my travel expenses this time? Doug, I'd love to visit Ireland. The country's history gushes up like black gold under every footstep. But stumbling from stone circle to circle in search of magic fairy mushrooms is not my idea of...
It's on a dig!
As in an archaeological dig.
What other kinds of digs are there?
When you're the man behind the big white curtain, I'm not sure. Seriously, a dig?
Yep. Seems student volunteers have disappeared from a dig somewhere in County Cork. No trace of them wandering off or leaving the area. Just vanished. Poof! The locals and the Irish Times are convinced it's fairies, as am I.
What's the focus of the dig?
I don't know. They supposedly found some kind of spear. A fairy spear.
Of course.
Don't grumble, Anya. You know you want to do this. Your breathing is fast, and I can picture you eyeing your hiking boots and boonie hat right now.
The only reason I'm breathing fast is...
1 hour, and I'll meet you at the airport with tickets in hand.
Deal.
A yellow cab dropped Anya off near the departures gate at Terminal 4. She'd packed light, a backpack with laptop and GPS, assorted survival gear, and a small suitcase were all she needed. Doug stood on the sidewalk, beaming. His dark, curly hair defied the existence of grooming products. Tall and gawky, his jeans hung low on his hips. Beside Doug, a slender man with pale complexion and a shock of shoulder-length red hair sported an armload of camera equipment and a couple nylon bags slung over a shoulder. He was dressed for adventure in khakis and a long-sleeved shirt.
Here's your ticket. I've already arranged for someone to meet you and drive you to Ballybeg. Thanks, Anya. This show is going to rock!
Uh-huh. Who's this guy? Where's Michael, the usual field cameraman?
Sick with strip. This is Eric Kritz. He's the new guy and a buddy of mine.
I've watched all the episodes of the show. I'm a huge fan of yours, Miss Creed.
Thanks. You can call me Anya. How old are you?
20.
Are you serious? Sending me across the sea with a... Has he got any experience?
Doug wrapped an arm around her shoulder and steered her a few paces away from the giddy cameraman.
Not much. But you have to start somewhere, right?
I can't believe this. You're sending me across the ocean with Doogie Spielberg? Doug, I'm in no mood to train a new guy. I don't even know how all that camera stuff works. Does he?
He does. His father owns Queensmark Studios out of Manhattan. They do independent films, documentaries, and stuff. Eric has been following in his father's footsteps since he could toddle. He's very good with the camera. He knows the drill and accompanied his father on a stint last summer in Kenya. He's enthusiastic, but more important, he likes you. He can take care of himself. He's a big boy.
You owe me one for accepting this assignment.
Duly noted. You go and do your job. Sleuth out the facts and bring home fairy footage. Like I said, I arranged for a buddy of mine who lives near the dig to meet you and be your guide.
Another buddy? How old is he? 12?
Anya, you wound me. All my 12-year-old friends are tucked in their Transformers blankies right now. His name is Daniel Collins. He's more of a friend of Eric's father. Eric spent a couple of weeks at his home a few summers ago during the business trip with his dad. I understand the man's a laid-back dude, and you'll get along with him, I'm sure. You get along with everyone, Anya.
Guides are good.
You tell her about Daniel? Daniel's a bit of an eccentric, but more normal than any person on Earth. Trust me on that one. But whatever you do, don't get him talking about wine unless you've got hours to spare. The man is really into wine.
I can dig it.
Anya, this story is going to rock.
First sign of trouble, I'm sending him home.
Anya snatched the tickets from Doug's hands and strode into the airport through the sliding glass doors. His cell phone volume was turned off, yet he'd set it to flash with an incoming call. Garin Braden leaned across the black silk sheets and eyed the caller ID. A familiar yet unwelcome name was displayed. He sat back. A flute of champagne was cradled in his hand, and he ran his fingers through the long blonde hair that spilled over his bare chest. What the hell was the blonde's name?
No bubbly for you?
I'll be up in a bit.
The red flashing LED had ceased, and now the phone vibrated across the marble nightstand. That indicated someone was leaving a message. He didn't want to talk to the old man at this particular moment. Slamming back the champagne, Garin set the glass on the nightstand next to the phone that began to blink red again.
Give it up, old man.
Another message vibrated the cell phone dangerously close to the edge of the nightstand. Just when the phone teetered and threatened to drop to the marble floor, it flashed, and Garin snatched it and flipped it open.
What? This had better be good, Rue.
Well, it will surely be more stimulating than whatever it is you're engaged in right now.
I wouldn't be too sure of that.
Mental stimulation oftentimes exceeds that of the physical.
Doubt it. Why the call? I haven't heard from you in months.
Fouquet has resurfaced. Thought you'd want to know about it.
I'm not particularly concerned about ever seeing that thing again. Too many bad memories. A painting. Is that all?
It's being auctioned off at Christie's in New York this afternoon. I want you there. Buy it.
I'm not interested in putting that thing on my wall, ever.
It is not for you or myself. I thought it would make a nice gift for our Anya.
Why?
Garin, there are more things in life than fast cars, million-dollar acquisitions, and women. You know what month it is?
I'm not keen on the late-night quiz show, old man. I'll have you know I was engaged in something far better than...
Blonde or redhead?
Blonde?
Ah, come on. There's always another one around the corner.
True. Garin turned and cast a wink over his shoulder at the pouting female. She got up and lazily wandered into the bathroom.
Why don't you simply call in your bid?
I want you to look at the thing before bidding. I can't be sure this is the actual painting. It's merely attributed to Fouquet, and listed as in the style of the 15th century master.
So why don't you go after the bloody thing?
At the moment, I am not near any major airport. And there is a time issue. I found out about this just moments ago. And I know you have a collection of private jets and planes, and who knows, maybe even a submarine or two.
Sold the sub last month.
I hope it wasn't to the enemy.
Your definition of enemy is vastly different from mine, old man.
No matter. You can get there faster than I got in. So you'll do it?
For Anya?
Indeed.
Fine. Send details, an address, and get me set up with a bid number so all I have to do is stroll in and take the thing.
Done.
Rangy and easy in his skin, Daniel Collins was, from outer appearances, quite the character. Long, skinny jeans clung to his legs as if glued to the skin. The pants certainly didn't require the white suspenders that hung loosely over a black shirt, decorated with gold appliques across the chest. A red and black plaid coat, the sleeves rolled to expose his veiny forearms, hung on his lithe frame. Gold hoop earrings clung to both earlobes, and were small enough not to be garish, but added an interesting glint to his narrow face, which was mastered by bushy black brows. A black fedora capped his head, and he tilted it to Anya as she approached to shake his hand.
You must be the television host Mr. Morell asked me to drop everything to come and fetch.
Sorry about that. Doug tends to think the world moves on his time. So I assume you're as surprised about this assignment as I am?
Surprised, but willing. It's not every day I'm given the opportunity to show a lovely American lady around my neck of the woods. Eric?
You remember Eric Kritz? He's my cameraman.
Eric looked up from his iPod long enough to nod at Daniel. He didn't have the earbuds in. He'd explained to Anya during the flight that he used the music player as a backup hard drive to store still photographs. He must be paging through the aerial photos he'd taken from the plane as they'd landed, she thought.
Well, you're all grown up, Mr. Kritz. So, the two of you, have you got some ID so I can be sure you are who you say you are?
Taken aback by that request, but impressed by the wisdom of it, Anya tugged her passport out from her backpack and flashed it for him.
I don't have ID from the show, but I am who I say I am.
Eric did have press credentials for Chasing History's Monsters, which he flashed. He shuffled around in his duffel bag, pulled out a small cigar box, and handed it to Daniel.
Mr. Collins, a gift from my father.
Cigars. Thanks to your father, boy. I do love a Monte Cristo.
Inspired by Dumas' story.
Indeed. The Count of Monte Cristo. Fine story, if not a wee bit far-fetched.
With a wink to her, Daniel tucked the box under an arm without opening it. He gestured that they follow him to the parking lot outside the airport terminal.
Doug said you know the dig director and can get us clearance to film on site?
Already done. His name is Wesley Pierce, and he expects you. Let's hop at the jeep and you can get settled first. There's a cozy little B&B a few jogs from the dig site at the edge of Ballybeg. And I know the proprietress, Mrs. Riley. I already told you you'd be needing rooms. Be sure and take advantage of the breakfast every morning, but with a warning to avoid the black pudding.
Avoid the black pudding.
Anya climbed into the passenger seat of the jeep. Eric shuffled his equipment into the back and scrambled in.
Would it be all right if we head straight to the dig? After the flight delays and layovers, it's late afternoon and I'd hate to lose a day. I want to take a look around, familiarize myself with the area. I may find an opportunity to talk to someone who knew those who disappeared.
Doug was right about you being focused. To the dig it is.
Once out of the city limits, the regional roads in County Cork, all of Ireland for that matter, weren't so much roads as pathways carved out of necessity for getting from one place to the other. They weren't well marked, and if so, Anya noticed, the signs sometimes displayed kilometers and other times mileage on the same road.
Say, what is it with the mileage markers?
You have to learn the county quirks. I've decided it's always best to go in kilometers. But no matter what the method of measure you choose, you'll always end up somewhere sooner or later.
Somewhere is a better place to be than nowhere at all.
The open-topped jeep sucked in the country smells as they traversed the rugged road. Anya tilted her head against the seat and took it all in, while Eric wielded a mini-DVD video camera, sweeping it across the horizon.
Now you feel like you're home.
Huh?
I mean your heritage. Come to recall a conversation with your father. I think his dad's grandfather was from around this neighborhood somewhere.
Cool!
Anya caught Daniel's eye. He clearly wasn't impressed with Eric. She had to give the kid credit, though. He was filming, and she liked his focus. Ireland did take the prize for being green. Though a dusting of fog hung low above the ground, the rolling fields were coated with what looked like tightly packed moss, though she knew it was wild grass. Dark green shrubs, spotted with golden blooms, pocked the perfect quilt of emerald here and there.
Is that gorse?
When gorse is in flower, kissing is in fashion. Or so they say.
A row of pine trees lined a field where livestock grazed. The cattle were hearty and looked like something out of an old English cottage painting. There were even a couple of sheep. They careened around a sharp curve that hugged what Anya knew was a rath, a small hill that locals would be keen to avoid because they believed fairies lived beneath the hill. She had brushed up on the local mythology during the flight. It wasn't in her to resist any kind of mystery, and if that entailed learning more about the history of the land, then she was all for that. Fairies were definitely integrated into the Irish culture.
Hang on!
At Daniel's shout, Anya gripped the handhold above her head and was crushed up against the steel door. A fast-moving white truck barreled toward them. Daniel swerved sharply to the right. The jeep slid sideways over the rough gravel, the tires clambering for hold. Thick spumes of road dirt clouded over the open-topped jeep. Anya tucked her face into her elbow, but she still inhaled a hearty dose of dust.
Damn!
Devil take those lousy bastards!
Daniel gunned the accelerator and managed to navigate over what looked like moss-covered boulders edging the road. Through the foggy mire, Anya spied something small and white.
Sheep!
The jeep veered sharply left. Eric clung to the roll bar.
Shit, dude!
This the poor bloke. We'll be dining on top tonight.
How are you doing back there, Eric?
Okay.
And the equipment?
Full of dust, but fine.
Sorry about that.
Daniel's grin met Anya's worried glance. She offered him a sheepish smile. The jeep navigated the road in the wake of the truck that had blown by with so little regard.
The bastards in the new camp have all sorts of macho equipment they're driving back and forth at all times of the day and night. They've no respect for the land, that's for sure. Fascist me, it does.
The new camp? I thought this was a single dig. Isn't it just a simple artifact find?
Right. A farmer found a spearhead when he was cutting turf off a dried-up blanket bog. New World, the managing outfit, sent in a team to investigate. A team is headed by Mr. Pierce. When Neville took over the financing of the dig, he split it into two camps to get twice as much work done.
New World is the company overseeing the dig?
As far as I know. Unless Neville has taken the reins and holds sway over the entire operation.
Who's Neville? I've never heard of a private citizen taking over a dig from a management company. Unless he's with another overseeing outfit?
No. Neville's private, he is. He's a very powerful man. Let's leave it at that. He's seen something he wants. Now he's going to get it.
You work on the dig?
No. I'm not a bone kicker. Just stop in every once in a while to chat with friends. It's close to my house.
Daniel pointed north, and Anya spied a small, thatch-roofed stone house across the field.
That's my mom's home. I'm a half mile beyond. But you can't see for the hill. The dig site is ahead.
Time to film some fairies.
Anya rolled her eyes, but noticed Daniel's lifted brow at her reaction. A moment later, he pulled onto a gravel road, edged every 20 feet by head-sized boulders. It led to the dig site.
Looks like the rain is going to stay away today. You're in luck.
The luck of the Irish, eh?
Don't be trying the leprechaun accent, kid. It'll only get you in trouble around here.
Sorry.
Anya offered Eric a conciliatory smile from over her shoulder. They rambled over rough, potholed gravel and dirt tufted with grass. It wasn't a real road, but had obviously been worn down by the trucks like the one that had run them off the road earlier. Where the truck had come from was a mystery. And though she only got a brief look at it, she could swear it was armored because the windows were narrower than usual. The field was a compact area, perhaps a half mile long, bookended by a forest on one side and an electric fence on the other, which Anya assumed kept in cattle or sheep, though she didn't spot any four-legged creatures at the moment.
Is that the farmer's land beyond the fence?
Yes. The dig sits on the river's edge, a bit over half a mile from the shore. The forest separates the two.
The fog had receded, but the sky was still gray. Anya spotted eager students at work in the dirt, thanks to a tarp canopy erected overhead should foul weather decide to break.
The Bandon River is a jog to the west beyond the trees. We get some boats, private yachts, and the occasional sparge up the way. Great for fly fishing.
Really? And I left my fishing rod at home.
I can hook you up if you're interested in snagging a salmon or two.
We'll see if I have a spare moment. I'd love to learn to fly fish.
What the bloody...
Whoa!
Eric was juggling camera equipment to save it from breaking.
A fight?
Daniel shoved open the driver's door. Anya pinpointed the scuffle 50 yards ahead, just outside a staked canvas tent. Daniel leaped out from behind the wheel and raced across the muddy grounds.
Is he going to join in?
Appears so.
Cool.
Aiming his video camera at the scuffle, Eric began filming.
What could they possibly be fighting over on a dig? I mean, this place is boring central. People poking about in dirt with dental picks.
I'm gonna check it out. Stay out of everyone's way, but keep filming.
Much as she didn't approve of the macho posturing, if there was tension between the two camps, as a reporter, she was interested. As an archaeologist, she never overlooked the details. If people were disappearing into thin air, then exposing the differences and arguments between the two camps could be key in learning the truth behind it all. A crew of six men dressed in cargo pants and t-shirts, standard dig gear, surrounded two struggling men. A tall, sun-bronzed, dark-haired man with dusty khakis and no shirt delivered a punch that sent the other black-haired bruiser sprawling into Daniel's arms. Daniel shoved the fallen man aside, and now assuming the other's position, he went at the dark-haired one full force. He pummeled the shirtless one in the gut. The man's abs were well-defined, and he took the punches with a grinning challenge and gestured with his fingers to deliver more punishment.
Boys.
Feck!
The one who'd been shoved aside assumed a bouncing fighting stance. He wore black khakis and military boots. His black hair was shaved to stubble. Swinging, he lunged for the pair and rejoined the scuffle. All three went down in the wet soil. None seemed to have the upper hand, and if they did, it was quickly lost to another. The men standing around watching the fight pumped their fists and urged on their man. A few women in t-shirts and shorts, and scarves to tie back their hair, lingered away from the fight near the marked dig. Their interest was more worried than keen. Hands to hips, Anya wondered how long they'd go at it before someone got seriously hurt. Someone must have found something valuable. That was Anya's only guess as to the source of their rage. If one camp found something of value, who then did it ultimately belong to? Then again, she didn't notice any find tables or black rubber buckets with bits and shards of pottery. Must be inside the canvas tent. The dig was flat and bare and surprisingly clean of spoil dirt. The turf had been cleared away from a 40 by 40 foot section beside the tent. The second camp was about 200 yards to the north, just over a ridge that was too high to be one of the infamous potato ridges, still remarkable from the 19th century. It was far enough away so one couldn't shout back and actually hear what had been said, but close enough for curiosity. Beyond the ridge, she spied a truck, similar to the vehicle that had almost driven them off the road. It looked like a delivery truck, though. She figured it must contain supplies, or could even function as a mobile office for the dig director. Finally, Anya decided enough was enough and stepped forward.
All right, boys, fun and games is done. Time to get back to work.
You heard the lady.
Daniel was bent over one man and clasping him around the waist, while the other twisted his leg to topple the threesome.
Hold it, Feck!
The dark-haired man was the first to pop up from the tangle. Hopping from foot to foot, his fists ready for a defensive swing, he smiled a million-dollar blast of white that made Anya do a double take. Relinquishing his fight stance, he smoothed a palm over his muddy abs and gave her the once-over. A preening look. She straightened her shoulders.
A lady stepping up to the fight. Fancy a tussle with the boys, then.
That was a tussle? Was the bloodshed worth it? What were you fighting about?
The other guy, whose lip was cracked and bleeding, shook himself off and puffed up his chest. He wore a dark blue muscle shirt streaked with dirt.
Ma'am?
It's Anya. Anya Creed.
Anya's here to do a shoot for her television program.
Absolutely not.
Cool your jets, Slater. Let's offer Miss Creed our nicest welcome before you start slinging mud at her.
If I'd known the welcoming committee was going to get rough, I'd have worn my armor.
Wesley Pierce, director of this camp. You're going to put us on the television. Be sure to get my good side, will you?
He turned and offered a beaming smile, face coated with mud.
This is Michael Slater.
Anya noticed the empty gun holster strapped under Slater's left arm.
No filming on location.
Nice to meet you both.